Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. Here's an amazing story. Yesterday, the Pentagon's Special Operations Command made an announcement from its official Twitter account. Special Operations Command is a very significant thing in the U.S. military and in our country. It oversees Delta Force, the SEAL teams, and the rest of our most celebrated, best-trained, most lethal warfighters. So the tweet announced that a man called Richard Torres Estrada is now the, quote, chief of diversity and inclusion of America's special forces, and they included his picture with the announcement. Then, at the very top of its website, the Special Operations Command included a link to its extensive, it's quite long, new diversity and inclusion strategic plan. Now, the one thing we know about that plan is that it will result in the dramatic lowering of standards within our elite ranks. It probably already has. So how will that make America safer? Well, the generals never said. You couldn't find that on the website. Instead, they told us that, quote, all of us understand that diversity and inclusion are operational imperatives. They didn't say how, they just said they're imperatives. So this is the initiative that Richard Torres Estrada will be running. So the question is, who exactly is Richard Torres Estrada? Well, his Facebook page gives some indication of who he is. On it, you will find an attack on the police as racists. You'll find crude BLM propaganda. You will find a photograph of Donald Trump holding a Bible in front of a church. Next to Trump is a photograph of Adolf Hitler. The point is, they're the same. So this is the guy who now oversees hiring for the Navy SEALs. If you're wondering whether our military leadership has gone woke, you can consider that question settled for good. The Pentagon is now the Yale faculty lounge, but with cruise missiles. And that should concern you. Meanwhile, the rest of the world rolls on and gets more menacing by the day. Tonight, for example, the Suez Canal, one of the busiest shipping lanes in the world, is blocked by a stranded container ship. Was it an accident? Maybe, maybe not. We don't know. What we do know is that the Suez Canal is vital to the world's economy. That's not an overstatement. The Suez Canal is one of only about a dozen strategic choke points that control virtually all global trade, and now it's closed. So this is a challenge to America's critical national interests. How is the Pentagon responding to that? Well, they're occupied with other things right now. For the last month, the entire U.S. military has been operating under a so-called stand-down order that was issued by the new Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, the defense contractor now running the military. Lloyd Austin believes the real threat to America is not the Chinese government or paralyzed global trade. The real threat to this country is people who didn't vote for Joe Biden. Watch.
And if confirmed, I will fight hard to stamp out sexual assault and to rid our ranks of racist and extremist. The job of the Department of Defense is to keep America safe from our enemies. But we can't do that if some of those enemies lie within our own ranks.
So Republicans voted to confirm him. He is himself an extremist. And they have said virtually nothing about Lloyd Austin since, because they're paralyzed. They're paralyzed because Lloyd Austin has no problem calling his opponents racist immediately, ridding our ranks of racists and extremists. The key question is, how does Lloyd Austin define a racist or an extremist? The definition matters. This show has been denounced as a dangerous white supremacist organ for the crime of reading Martin Luther King quotes on the air. So it's worth finding out what those words mean. But Lloyd Austin doesn't provide a definition. And that's not accidental, because what you're seeing is not an attempt to make the military better. What you're seeing is a political purge of the military. Consider what has been happening during the military's training on, quote, extremism. A lot of enlisted soldiers have asked a pretty basic question. Hey, wait a minute. Weren't the BLM and Antifa rioters this summer extremists? Seems like they were. They murdered people. They murdered a lot more people than died at the Capitol on January 6th. A lot more. They burned businesses, they wrecked cities. In some places, it took the National Guard to stop them. So why aren't these people, quote, extremists? Good question. Well, a man called Ramon Colon Lopez was called in to explain why, to tell the troops why they were wrong. Colon Lopez is the senior enlisted advisor to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. These questions, he conceded, are, quote, coming from every echelon that we're talking to. Some people may think, all right, so the events of 6th of January happened. How come you're not looking at the situation that was going on in Seattle prior to that? Well, yeah, exactly. Kind of an obvious question. Well, Ramon Colon Lopez has an answer. Actually, it's more of a threat. Quote, I am concerned about the way that some people are looking at the current environment and what they are thinking they can do and act upon based upon their personal beliefs. Oh, in other words, if you ask questions like these obvious questions, you are by definition dangerous. Clone Lopez said he was working hard to, quote, make sure that military members understand the difference between Seattle and Washington, D.C. All right, what are those differences exactly? Well, here's one. BLM, Clone Lopez explained, is a, quote, social injustice organization, and therefore it's not extreme. Also, quote, when the military called upon us to go ahead and support an effort in Washington, we did. We never got called for the law enforcement issue that was happening in Seattle. Oh, so the mayor of Seattle never called the National Guard to put down Antifa. Therefore, Antifa is not an extremist organization. Well, that's ludicrous, obviously. In fact, it's not even true. Actually, the National Guard did deploy to Seattle during the riots last summer, but whatever. Clone Lopez's job isn't to make sense. It's to send a political message from the Joe Biden administration. We're in charge now. This week, we spoke to a DEA agent who was fired for being in Washington on January 6th. He didn't riot. He never even went into the Capitol building. In fact, he defended the cops outside against the rioters. He's on video doing that, but it didn't matter. He didn't vote for Joe Biden, so he's gone. And he's hardly alone. Earlier this month, the FBI arrested a man from Oklahoma called Anthony Alfred Griffith. According to the FBI, here's Anthony Alfred Griffith's crime. He walked into the Capitol building through open doors and took pictures. Then he handed those pictures to federal investigators. Here's the FBI's criminal complaint against Griffith. It accuses him, quote, of witnessing multiple people trying to break down a door. Oh, he saw it happen. So for the crime of witnessing other people of trying to break down a door, Anthony Alfred Griffith now faces 7 years in prison. But don't worry, people like Anthony Alfred Griffith, our leaders tell us, are extremists, they're white supremacists, and our military needs to be laser focused on making certain that no one who votes like these people do can ever serve in the armed forces again.
We absolutely need to look at any type of white supremacists that are still members of the military and how they're being targeted for recruitment by white supremacist groups. And we need to weed this out. This whole idea of police officer on police officer violence with those officers who have been turned by white extremists is really scary to me. And I know it's got to be scary for the other police officers.
I am considering legislation to create a standalone punitive article in the Uniform Code of Military Justice to address violent extremism in the ranks and to send a message of deterrence that this kind of conduct will not be tolerated in the military.
We've seen a lot of reports highlighting how many of the attackers were veterans. And there's been really a growing recognition that the military has to do more to address extremism in its ranks.
It's really an amazing clip. The first two people you saw speaking, Hirono and Duckworth, are extremists. They're the most extreme members of the U.S. Senate. They went on television this week to tell us that people with the wrong skin color couldn't be hired for federal jobs. Did anyone at the Capitol on January 6th call for that? Not one person that we're aware of, and we denounced it immediately. So they're extremists by definition, and they're lecturing us about extremism. The military has to do more to address extremism. And in a way, they're doing that by aggressively promoting extremism. Every 2 months, senior enlisted leaders in the military gather for something called the Commanding General Stewardship of the Army Profession Forum. In January, that forum included a, quote, professional dialogue on the racist hate tract, White Fragility, written by lunatic Robin DiAngelo. No one condemned Robin DiAngelo's obvious extremism. They celebrated it. Just last month, someone called Lieutenant General Brad Webb, the commander of the Air Force Education and Training Command, made it very explicit. He acknowledged that the Air Force was recruiting candidates with a private pilot's license. Now, that might seem like a wise course. Flying planes is what the Air Force does. But to Lieutenant General Brad Webb, no, that's systemic racism.
One of the other areas in line with that has been aptitude tests.
Yes, sir.
And in fact, the chief mentioned that one as well in his talk the other day. But we are deep underway in updating pilot tests and also officer qualification tests. Mm-hmm. That at its root, you know, you get a weighted score if you have a private pilot's license. Well, that's a socioeconomic influencer. In other words, if you're rich enough to afford to have private pilot time, you can get a license. That ought not be, weighted,
right?
in such a way that you exclude, various ethnic groups.
So the real question is, how did a doughy moron like that end up with an important job in the military? This isn't the Department of Transportation. It's not the DMV. This is a serious thing. This is the federal agency to which we give the most money that exists to protect the rest of us from foreign threats. And guys like that have power? That guy's the commander of Air Force Education. And it's not just him. In October, the head of the Air Force Recruiting Office, Major General Ed Thomas, published a piece on Yahoo called 86% of Air Force pilots are white men. Here's why that needs to change. So you read this and you've got to wonder what the families of the thousands of American white pilots who have died defending this country over the last 100 years thought of that. Ed Thomas wants them to know that their husbands and fathers and sons shouldn't have been flying planes in the first place because they were the wrong color. Pretty remarkable. We actually called Ed Thomas after his piece came out to ask about this. He was kind enough to talk to us. Had a long conversation. He never explained the only thing that matters, how his race mongering makes this country safer. He obviously didn't care. Clearly hadn't even thought about it. How did someone like that get power in the U.S. military? There are a lot of generals like that. Well, Matt Gaetz represents thousands of military personnel. These are people who join the services because they love the country and they want to protect it. These are the people who are getting crushed by this stuff in the U.S. military, the enlisted people, and no one's speaking up for them right now. So at a hearing in Congress the other day, Matt Gaetz did.
How long until Make America Great Again hats are considered an extremist symbol? How long until Catholic or pro-life groups or those who believe in two genders are too extreme for the ruling woketopians? Today is about nothing more than cancel culture coming for our military, and it is disgusting.
Disgusting, he said. Well, disgusting is usually hyperbole, but in this case, it's understatement. Matt Gaetz joins us tonight to explain what happened in that hearing. Congressman, thanks so much for coming on. So as far as I know, you were the only Republican in that hearing who seemed upset about what you were hearing. First, tell us, is that true? Why were you the only one who was upset about it? And second, what were you hearing?
Well, Congressman Austin Scott and Scott Desjarlais both also stood up for members of our military. But
good.
The problem with Republicans is that we surrender the frame. We allow ourselves to be lulled into this concept that what we really need to be talking about is whether or not there are people who liked the wrong meme or might be members of the wrong listserv or get their news in the wrong places. Look, in China right now, Tucker, they're not doing gender sensitivity training. They're not wondering whether or not their military is woke enough. They're wondering whether or not they're advancing in critical areas like quantum computing and artificial intelligence. Now we see the wokeification of the Department of Defense, and the reason why is because the leftists have long since taken control of the Department of Justice, the FBI, the Department of State, and the Department of Defense was this last bastion where conservatives maintained a substantial amount of influence, and they're trying to strangle out right-leaning folks who are in the military by monitoring their social media. And what troubles me is that this discussion in Congress is gaslighting exactly what the Biden administration is doing. They're worried about wokeness not winning, and our country deserves better, and our military deserves better.
Well, we need better. I mean, flat out. Now we have a guy with Hitler memes on his Facebook page and garbage BLM propaganda overseeing hiring for the Navy SEALs. I mean, why is there not some red alert going off among Republicans in Congress? Like, this is very serious.
The left is always good at designating the umpire, which is what they're doing at the senior levels of the military right now. But you know who we had testifying before us on this issue in Congress? The Southern Poverty Law Center. We literally had a hate group lecturing us about hate. The Southern Poverty Law Center, of course, even designated Ben Carson a person of hate. So it won't just be white members of the military that are hunted. It'll be anyone who might have politics that doesn't align with the ruling class. And that should trouble every American.
Well, that's exact and nicely put. That's right. This is political, fundamentally. Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida represents an awful lot of active duty military. Thank you.
We're proud of him. Thanks, Tucker.
I want to bring in now retired four-star General Jack Keane, my first guest for the hour. Good to see you, General. Story, I want to move to this. Turning to other foreign policy challenges now for the Biden administration, General. The next commander of U.S. forces in the Pacific is warning lawmakers about the growing threat from China. Let's watch.
We see China increasing at a rate that is faster than anyone previously believed their nuclear stockpile. We've seen the largest military buildup by China. That does bring with it certain vulnerabilities.
What's happening with China?
Well, first of all, China has a very comprehensive policy to seek domination of the region and also the world economically, technologically, and militarily. But the military issue here is very significant, Harris, because this commander who's coming in and the outgoing commander are essentially saying the same thing. And to break it down simply, in the Indo-Pacific region, the United States military is outgunned. We have gone through significant erosion of our capability because of the priority of the 9/11 wars and the reduced defense budgets, largely during the Obama administration. As such, we are outgunned in that region. The Chinese have more ships, more airplanes, and an incredible amount of offensive conventional missiles, the largest arsenal on the planet. And what they can do to our forces in the region is very significant.
I want to tick along here, and I want to get this from you because I know you know this. How in the world do we get to the point where they have so much more than we do?
I just said it. I mean, it was the priority of the 9/11 wars and the reduction of the defense budgets. You put that together for 20-plus years, and we are where we are. The Trump defense budget is trying to get us out of that. But now, I mean, we need, because the Chinese are so aggressive, they've got the wind at their back economically, they've got the most rapid-growing military, and they're ambitious and aggressive. You can see what they've done in crushing Hong Kong's democracy, what they're doing with the Uyghurs, the intimidation and coercion of Taiwan on a daily basis. We have to put in place an absolute deterrence that they see as credible. One, they see the capabilities there, and we have to fix that as urgently as possible, and the admiral was asking for that. Number two, we have to convince them that we have the resolve to use it, and that is what makes a credible deterrence. I believe in the Obama administration, they believed that we would not use it, and already the military capability was eroding. So those two things have to be done. I believe the administration is doing the right thing. They're taking a tough stand here. And we're going to see if they resource the Defense Department and also what this admiral is specifically requesting, because he is saying the problem is urgent. And I agree with him. We're not hyping the enemy here, as sometimes people in the Defense Department get accused of doing. This is a serious threat, and we have to pay attention to it.
Let's get to North Korea. Firing several short-range missiles over the weekend, and the White House shrugging it off, saying that the launches were not covered by sanctions. But North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un's sister recently warned, quote, if the Biden administration wants to sleep in peace for the coming 4 years, it had better refrain from causing a stink at its first step, end quote. What does that mean, and what does that mean coming from her?
Yeah, well, she's obviously the closest confidant to Kim Jong-un, and she is speaking for him. What has happened is we've been stalemated ever since the Hanoi summit back in 2019 when we asked the North Koreans to put a plan on the table to denuclearize. All they wanted was sanction relief. We saw through it, and the Trump team walked out. There hasn't been any substantive negotiations since then. What is happening? I believe Kim Jong-un is starting to flag this administration. He'll start with these short-range missiles. We'll hear his belligerent rhetoric again, not just his sister. He'll probably go to medium-range missiles to try to get the administration's attention, then go back into negotiations to do what? To get sanction relief. This has always worked in the past. It's no doubt he's going to try this again out of his playbook, even though it did not work with the Trump administration. I believe they're creatures of habit here, and they have succeeded at it in doing it. Also, here's another important point. He's not in desperate straits as much as he had been in the past. And the reason is Russia and China are covertly providing economic assistance to North Korea, despite the fact they voted for the resolutions that prohibit that. And they're lying through their teeth when they're saying they're not doing it. We have the evidence that they are doing it.
Wow. So they're in concert. And thank you earlier for answering my question. I just could not believe that in a 20-year gap, the 9/11, so on and so forth, we could not make up the difference, and China has gained so much ground on us militarily. That is really ground-shaking. Both these things are. And they kind of go together the way that you just said it. General, thank you very much. Good to see you today.
Yeah, well, thank you. Good talking to Harrison. Thank you for your father's service.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
In 2015, a Rhode Island man called Edward Canalia got into a fight with his wife. The next day, his wife went to the police and told them that her husband was mentally unstable and suggested he might kill himself. So several police officers did what they're trained to do, and they came to the house. And they took Edward Canalia to the hospital. At the hospital, he was evaluated. After that evaluation, doctors determined that he did not need to be admitted to the hospital and that he was not a danger to himself or others. End of story, but not really. Because while Edward Canalia was in the hospital, the police decided to check what was inside his home. They didn't have a warrant. They knew that no mental health professional had made any conclusions about his psychological state. But they went ahead and rooted through his possessions anyway, and that's when they found two firearms. So no one says that they were illegally owned, but the police took them anyway. Again, they had no warrant. The suspect wasn't there. They just took the guns. And even after doctors said their determination was Edward Canalia is not a threat to himself or others, the police kept those guns. They just stole them. Now, you didn't think that could happen in America, and of course it's not supposed to. The Constitution prohibits that. The police can't just show up at your house and take things. So this case is now before the Supreme Court, as it should be. But here's the remarkable thing. The Biden administration is backing the police officers who stole Edward Canalia's guns with no warrant. In fact, the Biden administration is asking the Supreme Court to approve of this and make it a precedent. They're asking for permission to search any home they want without a warrant and take what they want. Any guns that Joe Biden's police find will be confiscated in the name of public safety. Think about that. It's almost beyond belief. This should be on the front page of every paper in the country. The ACLU should be fighting it. None of that's happening. According to Joe Biden, though, firearms are just that dangerous. And most dangerous of all, Joe Biden has told us, including this week, are something called assault weapons. Assault weapons are such a threat, Joe Biden says, he's not going to wait for the Supreme Court. He wants Congress, which his party controls, to pass a total ban on assault weapons. Well, if that sounds familiar, it's because we did it before for 10 years. And it didn't work. It didn't work for a bunch of different reasons. First, because no one can define what an assault weapon is. Second, because not that many people are killed by assault weapons. But Joe Biden doesn't care. If you go to Biden's website, you learn that assault weapons are responsible for, quote, our gun violence epidemic. They're weapons of war, and if you can get them off the street, this country will be a much safer place. Well, that's a total crock. And not only is it a lie, it's an appalling lie, contradicted completely by actual evidence. And here's the evidence. The most recent data from the FBI on this subject, come from 2019, was just released. And those numbers show that a total of 364 homicides in the entire country were committed in 2019 with a rifle, assault weapon or not, all rifles. To give you some context, that same year, 600 people were killed by what the FBI calls personal weapons, fists, feet, and hands. Meanwhile, knives and other cutting tools were used in a total of 1,476 homicides. Oh, so rifles of all kinds, including assault rifles, 370-something. Knives, 1,400. In other words, using the argument that Joe Biden is now making before the Supreme Court, police ought to be allowed to come into your house and seize your cutlery without a warrant. Cutlery control could save many times as many lives as a ban on AR-15s. So why aren't they making that argument? If you really wanted to save lives, you'd ban the things that cause the most deaths, wouldn't you? You would if you cared about public safety. If you cared about public safety, you'd also enforce the gun laws already on the books in, say, Chicago, Washington, Minneapolis, where they're not enforcing the gun laws. This has nothing to do with public safety. It's an attempt to punish the people who didn't vote for Joe Biden in November. A lot of these problematic voters have the guns the Biden administration is describing as assault weapons. And they know that they can humiliate Edward Canalia, just walk in and steal his guns. They can do it to you, too. By the way, whatever you do, don't lie on a federal background check. Joe Biden would like every gun transaction, including gifts to your children, to require a federal background check. And if you lie on one of those forms, you go to prison for 5 years. Done. You're done. You go to prison for 5 years. Unless you're Hunter Biden, in which case the Secret Service shows up and tries to cover for you by confiscating the evidence from the gun store. That's what they tried to do in Delaware. If you're Hunter Biden, you're fine. If you're you, you're a felon. That'll teach you to vote the right way. Coming on, so really brave of you and a service to the country to write this piece. Tell us what you saw.
Sure. So let me be clear, Tucker, right off the bat, that our military is chock full of real patriots and real heroes. But the military's yes. leadership class and anyone who aspires to be a part of it appears to be given over wholly to this weak, un-American, woke progressivism. And this extremism training that the military and, frankly, all 1.4 million members of the Department of Defense are currently being subjected to is just the latest instance of that agenda. Now, during your opening monologue, you went through the whole litany of how China is expanding its military, becoming more belligerent, and, in fact, even imposing masculinity training. Get that. Meanwhile, right. the American military's top brass is talking about putting pregnant women into combat, expanding its use of race and gender-based quotas, putting a diversity and inclusion officer at the top of our special forces. And so what you have right now is President Biden, his top generals, looking at an ascendant Russia and China, a lack of stability in the Middle East, a crisis on the border, nuclear North Korea, and they're thinking, you know what we need more of? We need extremism training. It's absolutely absurd.
What I was so struck by in your op-ed is that you spoke up against it. As an American, as someone who knows how impressive so many of our military members are, I mean, that's what's so upsetting about this. They're not wrecking the DMV. Who cares? This is real, and there are great people in right. it. Why are you almost alone in saying anything about this? Where are all the generals? Where are all the colonels, really? I mean, there's some really smart, good people. Why aren't they saying anything?
Look, a lot of these guys are looking at a Biden administration, and what do they have their eyes on? They have their eyes on the next star. And so in order to join those upper echelons of a Biden administration or democratically controlled executive branch is falling into lockstep with whatever that ideology is. But I got to tell you, Tucker, after publishing that article, I've received tremendous outpouring of support via email, private messages, and so forth among the ranks. So I derive a lot of optimism from those guys, even though when I think about some of the top Biden-supporting top echelons of our military, the future is not very bright, but I'm still fairly optimistic.
Boy, I know that the SEAL teams are just a tiny part of our military, but they're symbolically important. They get so much attention more than any other group.
Right.
I mean, they're going to wreck them, aren't they? I mean, that's clearly the plan. Like, they can't handle how masculine the SEAL teams are. Or am I being paranoid?
No, you're not being paranoid at all, Tucker. In fact, with this subject, it's hard to be paranoid enough. Look, the way that the military is treating this extremism training is it gives these sort of HR departments within the military tremendous leeway to decide what does or does not constitute extremism. Okay. But we don't have to listen to the mealy-mouthed left about what those things mean. We can look to the government's own documents about what they're looking to do. So extremism training is literally, and I'm quoting from documents, to eradicate, eliminate, and conquer all forms of racism, sexism, homophobia, and so forth. What does that stuff mean? Who knows? And we saw from Wednesday's House Armed Services Committee that there's no agreement within the Congress about what those things mean. And the military is eager to offload decisions about what those terms mean to college campus style diversity and inclusion committees. And so this is a deeply unserious undertaking. And it shows you how far off our top Biden-allied military leaders are from keeping their eyes off the ball about what really matters, and it's fighting and winning wars.
Amen. Nicely put. Aaron, I appreciate you coming on tonight. You're brave. Thank you.
Thanks, Tucker. Appreciate it.